The Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler, and boy, do we have an interesting program for you today. Not that they aren't all interesting. First of all, our guest on the program is Yolanda York, back from the Social Security Administration, to try to clarify the new provisions that were passed as far as Social Security last November, which has a lot of people scratching their heads. So somehow we hope to clarify some of that for you. And we're going to do something different here on the program. Normally it's Jim and myself talking, but we're going to do something today with Rob Bernard on long-term care, which involves also tax deferral planning, and then long-term care planning, which as people live longer and longer, is becoming a much more important issue for many more people. So, Jim, you have it here.
As we have talked on lifetime income over the years, we talked about one of the things that plagues many people that retire, especially in the later years, are medical expenses. The average couple today, depending on what cost you're looking at, can plan on spending anywhere between $230,000 and $250,000 on medical expenses over their retirement years. But that doesn't include one of the biggest expenses, and we're going to talk about some real-life cases today, and that is long-term care facility, because we all know when you have to put a loved one into a long-term care facility, the cost can mount. So joining me on the program today is Rob Bernard from PFS Group. Rob, welcome to the show, and let's talk about something that I think later on in the program that has affected both you and myself in our own families, and that is dealing with long-term care. But before we do that, let's refresh our listeners about tax deferral, because most of us are familiar with IRAs. People are putting money in a 401k program in order to reduce their tax bill. So they're basically familiar with pension plans as tax deferral, but there's also things out there called tax deferred annuities. So let's begin our discussion with tax deferral.
Thanks, Jim. As investors, we love tax deferral because we keep the dollars we'd otherwise have to withdraw to pay taxes each year in our portfolios and leave it in there, still invested in stocks, bonds, or mutual funds that made that money grow last year, and hence there's a larger balance to have a chance to grow for the next year, right?
Let's talk about the example, because most people don't realize the kind of benefits of using tax deferral. As you mentioned, Rob, when you put money in a pension plan, you get a tax deduction. That's money that is not taxed, so you don't have to pay the government that. And on top of that, any earnings you get, whether it's interest, dividends, or capital gains, grow tax deferred. So let's take a simple example. Let's say I have $100 in a taxable mutual fund, and let's just make this easy for our listeners, and let's say it grows 10%. Well, by the end of the year, I'd have $110. But obviously, we're forgetting a couple of things. And there was buying and selling to get that $10 return, and that activity generates taxes. So maybe, depending on a person's tax bracket, they have to pay $2 to $3 in taxes, leaving only, let's say, $106 to $107 left. So let's talk about the advantages of compounding, especially for those listening that may be 50, they have 10 years, 15 years further to go before they retire, the benefits of tax deferral versus paying the tax up front.
With tax deferral, we keep that entire $110 at work because we defer the taxes this year, next year, and the year after. So all things being equal, we have a bigger account value that we still owe taxes on the gains, but at least that money worked for us. We grew that money faster and can, for the most part, decide when to pay those taxes, which inevitably is at the same time we withdraw some or all of that money. Fair enough?
Yeah, so the $3 or $4, depending on your tax bracket, that you'd normally shell out to the government up front, that's $3 or $4 that's in your pocket, that's earning, compounding, earning interest and dividends. So everybody understands that, and I think our listeners would as well. Let's contrast the various venues that you have for tax deferral. Most listeners are probably contributing, Rob, to some kind of pension plan, whether it's an IRA, maybe a 403. 403B or 457 plan if you work for government. But let's talk about other methods of tax deferral and how that might lead right into long-term care or planning for medical expenses during retirement.
Sure. We all know that IRAs and 401Ks and the like grow tax deferred, but tax deferral can work in taxable accounts as well. Because we can grow our money faster tax deferred, that draws a lot of investors that want to defer their taxable dollars with investments like annuities. So I think it's worth addressing that same $100 after tax money, because it wasn't in your IRA, if we've taxed it all along the way, maybe grow to $160 over that period of time because we paid taxes as we went. If the same dollar were in the same investment at that same annual cost, maybe the $100 and after-tax money grew to $190 due to tax deferral.
We know that we're going to have more money working for us, and where this really becomes significant is if we have a long time frame to compound that money. Obviously, if you defer taxes, in the example we just gave, you deferred maybe $20, $30 or something like that over a year or two. But, you know, Rob, when you start doing that every single year and you do it over 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, many of our listeners probably contributed to 401k programs over a couple decades, that becomes a substantial amount of money. So if the same tax dollars are in the same investment and we don't have that cut coming off the top, it's obviously going to be a better deal, isn't it?
That's right. So in our example, $190 sounds better than $160, all things being equal. But keep in mind, most, if not all, of the taxes were paid on the $160 along the way. We still need to pay taxes on the $90 in gains on the $190 tax-deferred annuity. So maybe after taxes, it's worth, say, $175. Let me ask you a question. Investors love to increase their account values, but don't they get as excited about the tax liability? Not so much.
No, I mean, you know, anybody that's contributed to a 401k program, an IRA, they know sooner or later down the road, they're going to have to pay the piper. And especially with IRAs, because we all know when you turn age 70 and a half, the government requires you to take mandatory distributions. And it's amazing. Over the last couple of years, they have made those distributions higher. In other words, you used to have a lot of opportunities to minimize the amount that you take out, but they changed the withdrawal rates a number of years ago to increase them so that each year you age, you've got more money that you have to take out and pay taxes on. And I would say nobody likes to pay taxes on investments. I mean, we've got high tax rates. And typically, Rob, I've yet to meet anybody that says, gosh, I can't wait to file my tax return.
Yep, I agree. Typically, what I see is my clients who build up nice big tax deferred gains in their annuities spend their other money on living. And they usually pass away, unfortunately, with an annuity with large tax deferred gains. So in essence, they never really paid tax on that gain. That part sounds good. But here's the rub. An investor who is in a nice low income tax bracket of say 20% leaves her or his annuity to an adult child with the tax bill of that $90 on it. The adult child is probably in much higher tax bracket than the parent was. So maybe the adult child inherits that annuity and pays 38% tax on that $90. Ouch. Okay, let's put tax deferred annuities on the shelf for a moment.
Okay, so if tax deferral is great, and when, I don't think you would find anybody in the financial advisory business that would say, no, you don't want to do that, because everybody encourages to put money in pension plans. It's not just the tax deduction, the tax deferral, but it's also many employers, it's the matching amount that you get from your employer. So, Rob, I want to talk about something that we talk about frequently on the show. And when you and I got in the business in the early 80s, it was very common when people were thinking about long-term care, there was a plethora of long-term care policies. Over the years, we've seen fewer and fewer companies remain in the field. A lot of companies have exited the business. So let's talk about long-term care, because everyone I've ever met age 55 or older has or has had parents who needed long-term care, or they're challenged to find a cost-effective method to fund that care, especially, as anybody knows, after you get age 70, you imagine what the costs go up, because the likelihood of the insurance company paying out is greater, so they're going to charge you more. So let's talk about long-term care and what are the options out there.
Sure. Most clients with an annuity with tax-deferred gains embedded in it are between the ages of 65 and 80. Every one of us age 60 or older probably dealt with or knows of a parent or loved one who has needed to be cared for in their own home or facility. Jim, if we took calls right now, the phones would probably light up with slightly different family stories about how stressful long-term care situation is or was, or how expensive it is, or my knucklehead brother was worthless, etc. Bottom line, there's a great chance that everyone listening right now gets it. Long-term care can be a positive time in a family's life if you plan correctly for it.
You know, I think maybe one of the real issues why people end up facing this and getting surprised, Rob, is it's something you really don't think of. We know that the older we get, we're more likely to run into healthcare issues. It's just part of the aging process. But none of us think about what happens if we ever get into a situation where one spouse, or sometimes even both spouses, have to go into a long-term care facility. I mean, most people in their late 60s and beyond think they've missed the boat for buying long-term care insurance when they were younger, obviously when it was a lot cheaper. The older you get, as we know, even with life insurance, any kind of insurance, life, disability, the older you get, the higher the cost. So what happens if somebody's thinking, you know what? One of our neighbors, good friend, has come across this issue. Now they're thinking about the very same thing. What do you do?
Well, they really haven't missed the boat. I agree. They think they've missed that opportunity to plan for long-term care, but those with annuities have not.
And how do you use an existing annuity? I mean, you can annuitize it, which is one popular method described, but you also have the tax-deferred gain. So part of the annuity, if you annuitize it, part of it becomes taxable. So let's talk about that and how annuities are being used today for long-term care planning, because now you're seeing a lot more companies just in, gosh, since the beginning of the year, you've seen more companies that are exiting the exchanges under Obamacare. You've seen more companies over the last decade exit the long-term care market because it's simply too expensive. What does a facility around here cost, Rob? Anywhere from $6,000 to $7,000 a month, something like that?
In California, yeah. And if you wind up in the dementia ward, it can be as much as $10,000 to $12,000 for 24/7 care.
Wow. So what does a person do and how do you use annuities?
Well, I've been introducing ways for clients to take advantage of tax-deferred annuities. You recall the one example we used with a $90 unrealized gain? Taking that $190 annuity and planning for long-term care with a long-term care annuity that will do all three of the following things. It provides liquidity to your client if they ever need to take some or all the money out. That's pretty much general. It passes all $190 to your beneficiary if you ever need long-term care, just like an existing annuity. But if the $190 is sitting in this particular annuity that we'll talk about is used for qualifying long-term care expenses, the $190,000, you can say it's $190,000, but let's just continue with our $190, is worth two and sometimes three times more to spend on long-term care expenses. So you'll have two to three times more money to spend on long-term care before you need to start rapidly drawing down other sources of funds for long-term care.
Let's back up a minute and just explain how this all works, because, you know, in the example that you talked about, let's just change $190 to $190,000. You put $100,000 in, it's now worth $190,000. How does that multiply and become bigger other than the money that has been grown in the account?
Some particular insurance companies will give you a bonus. For example, if you can answer yes to 12 questions, you can probably qualify for two times the amount. If after a 15-minute interview, you can answer yes to further questions and they believe that you have all of your faculties with you, you may be able to qualify for three times the amount. So let's just say your $190,000 was $200,000. So your $200,000 goes to $400,000 that you can use for a long-term care benefit, but it has to qualify for long-term care abilities.
So are these IRS rules, Rob? Because I do know that if an individual, let's say, goes into a long-term care facility, those expenses are deductible on the income tax return. So explain some of the tax ramifications of how this works. Let's take your example, $190,000. Let's say a husband and wife, let's say husband becomes ill, has Alzheimer's, dementia, has to go in a long-term care facility. Explain how this works if you qualify and what are the things that have to be, let's say, met in order to be tax sheltered in this sense.
If I don't need long-term care, my family still gets the $190,000 and just pays taxes as they would have anyway in any other annuity. So if an investor spends the $50,000 in tax-free long-term care benefits, then dies, what does the beneficiary get? He gets $140,000.
So if I need to take some money out along the way, I can do that and probably be exposed to a small penalty for some period of time. And I suspect I'm going to have to pay taxes on any gain. So let's talk about the tax advantages that accrue if the money is used to take care or pay for a long-term care facility.
Sure. A client receives those long-term care dollars income tax free. So with every monthly reimbursement the client receives, they are literally getting out of paying income taxes on that gigantic taxable gain in their annuity. They are literally leveraging the most highly taxable asset in their non-qualified account two or three times and possibly reducing their tax bill if the annuity is used for approved long-term care.
We've been talking about a couple options here, and one of them is obviously if you can afford it. If you are, let's say, in your 40s, 50s, healthy, it's probably a good idea to buy a long-term care policy because at least at that point in your life, it's affordable. Later on, as you get older, and especially when you start thinking about these things, because I don't know too many people, Rob, in their 40s and 50s that are thinking about long-term care unless they're working with, let's say, a financial advisor that's doing a retirement plan. So let's talk about the various options and kind of bring this to sort of a summary for our client. So let's say I have $100,000. I put it in an annuity. It grows tax deferred. If I need to have access to the funds, I could take the money out. I would pay some tax on that, on any gains that accrued on that policy. I can annuitize it and turn it into monthly income, or you have this long-term care facility. Now, Rob, is this a rider or a special addendum or something that is added to a regular annuity policy? Are there special annuity policies designed for this, or can you do this with all annuity in general?
No, these are special annuities that will satisfy the IRS rule for tax-exempt payout for qualified long-term health care. One thing that all our listeners need to know is that we're doing a tax-free transfer from an annuity to another annuity. Another question that we should go to first, though, is how do we qualify for it? Potential clients do not have to have a extensive physical. They're not going to get their finger pricked. They're not going to have to pee in a cup. They basically answer those 12 questions and take an interview that lasts about 15 minutes. So once they've been approved, they can, as I said, be approved for either two times or three times that amount of money. And if they do a 1035 exchange, so they take a annuity that has a low basis, and use our $190,000 example. So we're going to do a 1035 exchange from that annuity into this annuity. And that $90,000, if it's used for long-term care, will not have a tax liability on it. So you can transfer that entire long-term gain in that annuity into tax-free benefits as long as it's used for long-term care. And that in itself is the big piece that people get excited about.
So let me just summarize. I put $100,000 in annuity, and let's just make this simple and just say that $100,000 grows by $100,000. So now I have a $200,000 annuity. I take that $200,000 annuity and I do a 1035 exchange, just like a 1031 real estate exchange. I exchange it into a long-term care annuity. Number one, there's no taxable event, but that $100,000 gain that I have in that annuity, now, let's say, I don't know, 5-10 years down the road, I get sick, I have to go into a long-term care facility, I have taken that gain and now turned it into a tax-free income if it is used for long-term care. Does that pretty much sum it up?
Pretty much sums it up. Now, here's a little more technique that goes along with this. If you succeed and get your 2x coverage, your 200 goes to 400. You use your money first, and if you're still requiring long-term care, then you start using the insurance company's needs. However, if you pass on after you're into the insurance company's money, your beneficiary does not get any. If you pass before you get into the insurance company money, then your heirs will get, or your beneficiaries will get, what's left of your original annuity, and they will pay any additional taxes at that point.
Rob, are there any age limitations? I know that annuities, at certain age, you can't get an annuity. Are there any age limitations for this? In other words, do they stop issuing or doing this at a certain age?
Age 80.
So up until age 80, this is a viable option. After age 80, this isn't available?
That's correct.
Okay, so let's talk about this and sort of bring this to home, because both you and I have parents that are in a long-term care facility. And why don't you tell the story about your own mother?
Well, thanks, Jim. It became evident that my mom needed care, and myself and my other two siblings were not able to provide that care. So in 1998, when my grandmother passed, it was a contentious battle between my mother and my uncle to who was going to provide roughly the previous 10 years of care. I noticed a lot of anxiety between my uncle and my mother when this was going on. So when my grandmother passed, I made a point to seek out and purchase a long-term care plan for my mother, and I did just that. So in 1998, I bought a plan that was an Infinity plan. I call them Cadillac plans. This plan would be able to be stepped up 5% a year and would last until death. So the plan I bought was for a benefit of $3,600 a month. And as I said, it would step up with inflation. So that was $4,700 a year. That was, as I said, 1998. About halfway through, 2-3 years into it, they raised the premium $200-$300 a month until when we finally drew on it, it was $6,700 a month. And we utilized it from 1998 to 2008. So basically, if you average the price between what it started at $4,700 and what it ended at $6,700, it's about $5,700 a year that we paid. So roughly $57,000 to $60,000, somewhere in that neighborhood, is what we gave the insurance companies. When she first started taking the benefit, remember that when you go to apply for your benefit, for the first 3 months, it's out of your pocket until they get all the paperwork done and truly believe that she does need help. But when it started at $4,500 a month, and now it has graduated to approximately $6,650 per month benefit, and that's a pretty big jump. So what we learned is that an Infinity plan is not available anymore because my mom, at age 92, has defied the tables. And so consequently, the insurance company is now paying out way more in benefits than they took in premium. So going forward, Jim, you can't buy Infinity premiums anymore. You're going to buy period certain. So 24 months, 36 months. I think, if I recall, the most you can buy is a 7-year plan, and that's it.
Yeah, it's just like anything else. A lot of companies are exiting certain areas because it's turned out to be much more costly than anticipated, which is what we're finding out in medical expenses. And this is one of the big things that's missing in most retirement plans. I mean, we all think about medical expenses, and yet we don't plan for them and certainly don't plan for long-term care. Well, Rob, as we close, if our listeners would like to find out more about this method of long-term care planning, maybe they missed out on getting a policy earlier, or maybe they have a history of, let's say, long-term care problems in the family. Maybe it might be genetic, or maybe they feel there's the onset of something like this. How can they contact you, please?
Thanks, Jim. They can contact me at 888-486-3939, and I'd be happy to discuss their own personal issues that they may have with their loved ones.
All right, Rob. Well, listen, thanks for joining us on the program.
All right, Jim. Talk to you soon.
All right, everybody, coming up next here on Lifetime Income, Yolanda York is joining Jim. What are the latest changes to Social Security, especially the ones that seem to have everybody's head scratching? So we'll figure that one out as Lifetime Income continues at FinancialSense.com.
You're listening to the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. To speak to Jim Poplava or his financial planning team, call us toll-free at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. We'd be glad to help you plan your customized retirement portfolio.
Last year, with the budget bill that was passed, several changes were made to Social Security. In fact, some of those need to be clarified. There are a lot of things that changed in that bill, which is why I've asked Social Security to come on the program. Joining me on this week's program is Yolanda York from Social Security. Yolanda, before we get into some of the sweeping changes that went into effect as a result of last year's budget bill, I wonder if we might begin with any other changes that took place beginning January 1st. I know that normally around January, there's usually pay increases to Social Security. There's increases to Medicare. There's other things that go into effect. What happened this year? As I recall, there were no increases to Social Security.
Exactly. So there was no cost of living. Medicare premium remained the same for those receiving Social Security benefits. But if you were not receiving Social Security benefits and you now apply for Medicare in the year 2016, the Medicare premium went up to $121.80.
And previously that was what, $104?
$104. That was one of the biggest changes, was the Medicare premium increasing for those who were not grandfathered because they were receiving benefits.
And Yolanda, if you're applying for Medicare, correct me if I'm wrong, but don't you have like 3 months prior to your 65th birthday, then you have the month of your birthday and 3 months afterwards? What about somebody that, I don't know, is working for an employer and then in the middle of the year, they decide that they want to apply for Social Security because they're no longer covered under an employer program? How does that work?
Oh, very easy. That would be the special enrollment period. So the individual, basically, my recommendation would be that the individual apply for the Medicare Part B the week they terminate employment. And there's two things that the person needs to do. Go to Social Security and say, I want to file for Medicare. And then they have to get a letter from the employer. And usually Social Security will give you this notice to take over to your employer so they can complete it, because it has to have special language. And the special language basically is saying that, you know, John Smith was employed by us from 65 to the present, and let's say they're 70 now, and they've been covered under the group health plan from that employer. So with this letter, we will enroll you to the Medicare Part B without a penalty and without a gap.
If somebody is also applying for Medicare, you mentioned that new individuals applying this year, the premium will be $120 a month, but there's also higher levels for Medicare depending on one's income.
Yes, that has not changed. The premium for individuals with greater incomes, that definitely is the same. I mean, the premiums are higher. And to check and see where the person qualifies, they can come to the website, socialsecurity.gov, and we can give you that information. You can see what the higher premium would be.
Now, let's go to what changed with the passage of the law last year. There used to be a couple strategies that were used for couples to maximize benefits. One was called file and suspend, where, let's say, the husband would file for Social Security, but then he would suspend it. So he would not receive payment. And typically, if he did that at age 66, while he suspended his payments to age 70, those benefits would grow by 8% a year. On the other hand, his wife could then file for her portion of his benefits, even though he wasn't receiving them, and she could do something called file and restrict, which means she would basically file for her own benefits but not receive them and allow them to compound at 8% a year. And the idea is that then at age 70, you have this 32% increase. So let's talk about what has changed as a result of the law. And there's been some clarification that has come out recently. I wonder if you could bring us up to date on that.
Okay, so my recommendation is going to be for anyone listening to this program is that if you are full retirement age this year, you have between now and April 30th to call your 1-800 number, 1-800-772-1213, and talk to one of the representatives. So you might want to book an appointment if you are of age 62 and older. We will allow you to book an appointment. Otherwise, it's a first come, first serve. But here's what I can share with you about the claim now, claim later. So if you're full retirement age, you can still file and suspend and entitle your spouse to collect under your Social Security number. And this will continue to go on for anyone born January 2nd, 1954. That's one of the exceptions. So these folks will continue to be grandfathered into filing for benefits under their spouse.
If you are not age 66, let's say I'm age 64 and I wait 2 years to full retirement age, which would be age 66, I can no longer do file and suspend and file restrict. That wouldn't work anymore, would it?
Once again, this is something that the clarification hasn't been made, where we can give you strict direction. So that's why we want everyone to come into Social Security or contact our offices so we can really define what is your scenario. Because, Jim, I need to say this. Anyone listening to this program is just going to be very confused about it because there's two separate strategies here. And if we're talking about both of them, it just gets very complicated because the listener will probably take away a different conversation. So again, if you're full retirement age, you should probably walk into a Social Security office and let's discuss your situation. What is very factual, and I want to say it now, if you're full retirement age before April 30th, the one thing people can still do is the file and suspend. File and suspend means the individual really wants to take benefits at age 70, but by filing today, they're saying, look, I just want to protect my claim in case at 69 I change my mind. I still can go to Social Security and just say, please send me the benefits retroactive going to full retirement age.
So you could get sort of a lump sum. So if you are 66 in this example, and you file and suspend, and at age 69, you know, maybe you have a situation where your doctor says, I'm sorry, but you have, you know, a serious disease here where your life expectancy may not be that great. You could then contact Social Security and get a lump sum payment as if you were receiving it going back to age 66.
Exactly. With no delayed retirement credits, but it would have gone back. So up until April 30th of 2016, that still can take place if you are full retirement age. So anyone after that, it would be back to the old rulings prior to the year 2000, where you file today, you start claiming the benefits today. There is a 6 month retroactivity though. And let's say you're at 67, you file benefits at 67, and then you realize, gosh, it would have been nice to have gotten them some prior time. We can only go back 6 months, not, you know, an entire 42 months or 36 months, actually, retroactive.
And then there was also something that you clarified, and this was raised when the bill was passed. Let's say that a woman was married to a man for more than 10 years. They get a divorce. Her ex-husband remarries. He now has a new wife, and he decides to file and suspend. because he wants her to get greater benefits or for whatever reason, there was a question as to whether the ex-spouse would be able to get part of his benefits. And that's been clarified, has it not?
So can the ex-spouse be entitled to benefits under the husband who's not receiving benefits? The answer is yes. And I'll give you a quick example of that. We just had a lady who came into the office. She's 62 years of age. She's been divorced for more than 2 years, but married for more than 10 years to this gentleman. So he's not filing for Social Security benefits, and he has no intentions in filing until he's 70. But because she was married to him and has been divorced for 2 years, and she doesn't have enough credits under her own Social Security number to get benefits on her own record, she came into the office, brought marriage certificate, divorce decree to show 10 years, her birth certificate to show that she's 62, and his birth certificate to show that he's also 62. So now she's filed under his number. He doesn't even know that we're paying this former spouse benefits under his record, and he probably will never even know that. Isn't that wonderful? And this has not changed. A divorced spouse is still entitled on whether the spouse collects or not.
Yolanda, given that there is some ambiguity in this law that has yet to be clarified, what would be the best advice that you would give somebody in a situation? Because there are certain strategies that are still possible. You can still file and suspend if you want, but if you're not age 66, you're not going to have some of the same benefits. So I know that in previous conversations that you and I have had, you talked about going online to Social Security. It's very easy. You can register. Same thing with Medicare. Would you still recommend that? Or if there are some questionable strategies or maybe issues that would be confronted, would you recommend actually making an appointment this time?
Yes. Number one, if you are 62 and over, you definitely need to create a My Social Security account at socialsecurity.gov. Find out what your monthly benefit is. The next step is, if you're 62 and over, call 1-800-772-1213 and then say, you know, I really want to book an appointment. And these are for the individuals who have not yet filed. So if you file, we're not going to be able to book an appointment. But if you are new, we will book an appointment and just say, look, I'm interested in applying for retirement benefits, but I need to know my scenarios. You know, I need to consult. Then you can ask the questions. We can tell you where you fall into these situations and give you a better perspective of what you need to do. You know, what's best for you.
It's amazing, because that is really good advice, because I was meeting with an elder client yesterday, and we were talking about some of the Social Security strategies that we presented at our client meeting, which was, you know, the file and suspend, file and restrict, and various things that you could do. And he said, I wish I would have known this when I was choosing my own Social Security benefits, because I didn't really need my Social Security at the time. And he is getting on in age now, and there's an age difference between them. He said, I would have chosen a different route to better set up my wife. So it really is important, because this is a major benefit. It's a major decision that a couple has to make in retirement, and they should take the time, either find a qualified advisor or perhaps make an appointment and go in and see an official with Social Security.
Yeah, and another thing that I want to remind our listeners again is that offices across the nation close at noon on Wednesdays. The employees are still there. They're basically adjudicating claims, but the offices are closed to the public. So if you're going to decide to do a walk-in, just be aware that Wednesdays are not a good day if you go after 12 o'clock. But again, it goes back to that. What's the best choice for an individual? And just from what we're seeing, and I know, Jim, that this is basically you breathe all this financial information, it may not always be the wise thing to do is take your benefits at 62. If you can wait it out, if you're a widower, they're the only ones that have a credible option. Maybe you don't need to take your own. This has not changed. This is the one thing that still remains constant. Widows and widowers have options. They could either take benefits on their own or take benefits on the previous spouse. And for some folks who've had more than one marriage, and let's say all marriages ended in death, well, then we can opt to see which of those benefits out there could pay you a higher rate before you start taking the benefit under your own Social Security. So these are the important questions that an individual should have, especially for women, understanding what women need to know. We have a publication on our website. It kind of gives you ideas of who else can you apply besides your own, and, you know, should you wait? And using our retirement estimator on our website, that is a phenomenal tool that any of us can benefit from because, you know, you could say, okay, tell me my benefit at May 2017. What will it actually be? And it goes and gives you a very almost to the dollar amount. It's not a guessing game. It's almost to the dollar amount.
You know, this is very important. I'm glad you mentioned that article that is on the Social Security site, which I think is very important for women that are divorced, head of households, or even a widower, because I think, what is it I read, 85% of surviving beneficiaries to Social Security are women. We know statistically they tend to live longer. And then also there was a recent article in the Wall Street Journal, Yolanda, that said that single women, whether single by themselves or head of the household, represent and oversee $5 trillion of assets. So, you know, finding out what your benefits are and knowing the ins and outs of Social Security are very important. Is there anything, Yolanda, that is written also for men so that men, like the client that I saw yesterday, said if he only knew that there were all these other options, he would have chose differently than what he did? Are there benefit publications or something that, let's say, the husband or men can look at to better take care or make better decisions?
Well, one of my favorites is Understanding the Benefits. That's a great publication for anyone to pick up because it does highlight all the types of benefits that the Social Security administers. And going back to what every woman should know, I know the name woman kind of probably thinks, oh, well, I'm not going to read it if I'm a man. But if you're married or ever been married, then that's a publication that will also give you advice about these other options. So don't let the name, what every other woman needs to know, deter you from reading it because it is great information. But to your answer, Understanding the Benefits publication is my favorite publication to provide to individuals. And you can just go to our website and ask for a copy or download it. So we could either mail it to you or you can just read it online.
And once again, you would still recommend going to the website, setting up an account, and familiarizing yourself with the various options and publications would probably be a first step, even before registering for Medicare or Social Security, so you know how the programs work, the different options that you have available, you know, even with Medicare, whether you're going to go on with Medicare Advantage, the various options, Medicare Part D. There's so many things that you need to learn before you make that decision.
And also on our website, socialsecurity.gov, there's the benefits for, so you can learn about retirement and all of this that we're discussing today. You can just basically click on retirement and it'll lead you to all this information. Then we have specifically for disability. Well, what if I'm not waiting till 62 or 67 to start collecting this retirement benefits? What if you're disabled today? You can get 100% of your benefit at any age. If Social Security determines that your disability is severe, where it's going to last 12 months or longer, you could be getting 100% of your benefits. So whatever you would have gotten at full retirement, you start drawing today. Then again, there's Medicare survivors, especially for spouses and children. It's all here. So if you just can take the time of navigating, you know, 6 minutes on our website, I can guarantee you that you are going to be very pleasantly surprised with the information that we have. And something that we're promoting right now that's also on the Social Security website is that MyRA. So it's another way to save money through the United States Department of Treasury. There's no cost or fees. And I think they're paying you like 2.31% through this RA. I know you can put a maximum of $15,000. Anyway, I really would like folks to also navigate to my RA. And again, this is at the Social Security website that you can find this information.
Well, 2.3%, that's more than what you can get on a 10-year Treasury note. Sounds like a great idea. You know, who would have thought, though, 2.3% would sound like a lot of money? But when you take a look at interest rates around the world, that's certainly a high interest rate. Yolanda, as we close, give out the website. So if our listeners would like to peruse your site and learn more about Social Security and Medicare, tell them how they could do so.
So www.socialsecurity.gov. It's for government. Again, socialsecurity.gov. And again, be very cautious when you go and put this information on the internet that you are at a government site. There's a lot of copycat websites out there. So always be cautious the site that you open. Social Security will never call you, will never send you emails asking you for your information. So we do our 100% to safeguard your information. And we want you to also know, don't carry your Social Security card in your wallet or in your purse. Leave that card at home. There's no need to carry your Social Security number, and do safeguard your information.
Good advice. Well, listen, Yolanda, thank you as always for joining us on Lifetime Income. All the best, and come back and talk again.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure talking to you as always. Have a great day.
You know what really struck me out of this interview, Jim, in listening to it? We pass laws, and everybody knows how complex the tax code is. Of course, things involving Social Security and other programs are complex. And they pass a law, and everybody's still trying to figure out what that means. what's in the law? And unfortunately, whether it's the IRS or the Social Security Administration, a lot of times they have to figure out what this means in the midst of everything.
Yeah, because that was really key, because when they got rid of file and suspend, one of the problems that came up was, what happens with a divorced spouse? Let's say a husband and wife get divorced, husband gets remarried, he decides because of financial situation, he wants to file and suspend to get a greater Social Security benefit. So based on the way the law was passed in November, it left this kind of open kind of, well, what happens to ex-spouses? Because under the law, if you've been married for 10 years, as an ex-spouse, you can claim half of your former husband's Social Security benefit. That was left up in the air. At least, John, they clarified that, but there's still many other provisions to Social Security that still remain to be clarified. I was talking to Yolanda before we went on the air there, and I was asking, I had like 10 questions I want to ask, and she says, I can't answer that one, because we're still seeking clarification. So once again, the most sweeping change to Social Security, and they're still trying to figure it out.
And give them enough time, they'll eventually figure it out. But what's coming up in the weeks ahead?
We have some really great shows. We're going to do a series of shows on why retirement plans fail and the coming crisis in retirement planning. My guest next week is going to be Nobel laureate economist, Mr. Merton from Harvard University. He'll be joining me on the program as we talk about retirement planning and many of the issues today that are causing many retirement plans to fail. All that coming up in the weeks ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.